This is F. Bron McCash, the Swordmaster for the Highlander television series, and you are listening to Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we cover everything from the Highlander universe. And on this episode, we're going to discuss the 30th anniversary of Highlander 2. 1991, it came out, and Highlander has never been the same since. My name is Kevin Reitzel, and I'll be one of your Blood of Kings Highlander podcast hosts. Please welcome my co-host, Mr. Lee Fillingsness. Lee, how are you, sir?
You know, I'm feeling pretty good for the oldest gentleman in Scotland, but, doing all right.
So, we're talking about Highlander 2 in these next two episodes of Blood of Kings. Just to let you guys know, we're going to do a little retrospective for this episode. In the next episode, we're going to do our version of Highlander 2, The Fixening. Highlander 2... is not a fan favorite there, Lee, for a lot of reasons. And I think that, to celebrate it could be contested by people. But I'm a Highlander 2 apologist, and we'll get into the reason why. And I want to, I'm going to tease at the end of this episode. I'm going to tell you how you can enjoy watching Highlander 2. Not by ignoring it.
Lots of drugs.
Not lots of drugs. I'm going to tell you how you can enjoy it and try to let some of that hatred go and, learn to love Highlander 2. And I know a lot of people are listening to this going, nah, you're not going to be able to do that, Kevin. Maybe not, but give it a shot. Keep an open mind. We've been pretty forgiving in the Highlander universe because you know why? We're Highlander fans. Lee, first thoughts.
No, this is kind of fun to go through this with you. I remember listening to the original episode you did with Norm back in the day, and I'm like, what? These guys are defending the movie? That's crazy. But then, kind of in listening to it reminded me that I actually enjoyed it the first time I watched it because I hadn't seen Highlander 1 first. So I didn't have, like, all these expectations. And I'm like, okay, this is kind of a serviceable action movie. Some of this doesn't make any sense. The rest of it barely makes any sense, but, still fun. Yeah.
Okay. So, well, let's get right into that right now. First question I have for you is your first thoughts of seeing Highlander 2 for the first time. Was it in the theater or was it on video?
It was on VHS. My dad rented it for me when it was probably summer between freshman and sophomore year.
So it came out. It came out in 91. Would you say this is about 92, 93?
This would have been summer 92.
Okay. So, about how old were you? I want to kind of get an idea of how young Mr. Lee was.
I would have at that point been 15. So
15. Yep. Okay. All right. It's good age to be introduced yep. into, a sci-fi action film and stuff. So why did your dad get Highlander 2? Had he seen the original?
He's also a dork, and this is a dorky movie. And so, he raised a second generation of dorks. And my nephew is also a dork. So it's just kind of, it flows downhill.
Okay. I like that. That's good. So what were your thoughts of seeing it originally at home on VHS?
Well, I mean, you can't go wrong with a hoverboard sword fight. That was pretty cool to 15-year-old me. Back to the Future 2 was just a couple of years before that. Then you got the guy with the jetpack. Also, can't go wrong with a jetpack sword fight. And you've got, a few other really fun things going on in there. I did kind of wonder why several times I remember, but, it's fun, very quippy. Who's this old guy? Why does he keep showing up? And at that point, my reference for Sean Connery was Marco Ramius. So I'm thinking, Hunt for an Octo.
The Hunt for Highlander 2.
Exactly.
I'm holding up a VHS copy of Highlander 2: The Quickening. That yours might have had a slightly different cover because this one was released a little bit later. It's got the Highlander catalog insert on the inside. This one's still sealed too. I haven't opened up this one yet.
I remember the one I rented had the back-to-back bro pose with the sword behind him.
Yes, yes. I still love that post. I still love that image. Yeah. I really, really do. Back-to-back bro pose.
That should be our new logo.
The back-to-back bro pose?
Mando bros.
Mando bros. Sweet. So what did your dad think of it?
You know, I don't think he watched it with me. I think it was one of those, you know, like, your dad gives you a video, he goes on a date, something like that. And like, you know, this was the 90s. Our parents like left us alone for amounts of time that were beyond 5 minutes. So I think that was one I was watching, you know, I mean, you remember, you know, your parents would go out and you'd get something from Blockbuster. So
Right. No, I hear you. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he didn't like it though.
So I saw it in the theater with friends of mine that were very big Highlander fans. Now, I was a fan of Highlander, the original film. I'd seen it, and I had a copy of it. But I would have to say that my friends at the time that I was with when we were seeing it in the theater were probably a little bit bigger fans than I was at the time. So we went to go see it. And we walked out of it, and I was kind of indifferent about it. I enjoyed the theater experience, but my friends, it was about maybe, about four of us, I think, total. They hated it, walking right out of it. They were trashing it right away. And I felt kind of peer pressure to pretend to hate it as much as they really hated it, to be honest with you. But, I went along with it because I in a way that I was disappointed, but I was still kind of indifferent about it from what I'm remembering with it. But as time went on, I would watch it again and I still enjoyed it because it freaking had Sean Connery in it. It had Christopher Lambert in it, you know, and it was fun to see those guys back in the film. Yes, it had its problems, but I remember when finally the Renegade version came out, I was so excited. And I was like, this fixes everything, you know, not necessarily it did, but I kind of talked myself into it. But either way, I still enjoyed it. So we'll get into the Renegade version a little bit later.
I sympathize with you there on that. Like, there's been several movies I've walked out of people absolutely hated. I'm like, I really like that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want to be that guy that's like, well, I kind of liked it. And they're like,
well, see, I am that douche. I am that guy that'd be like, what are you talking about? I loved X-Men Wolverine. Hunchstab the movie.
Some Highlander 2: The Quickening history. It was released on April 12th, 1991 in the UK in an 8-minute longer cut in November 1st, 1991 in the United States. Set in the year 2024, of course, the plot concerns Connor McLeod regaining his youth and immortal abilities, trying to free the Earth from the S.H.I.E.L.D. Corporation that's trying to, you know, make money off of it. It was shot almost entirely in Argentina after the country's economy crashed as the local economy experienced hyperinflation. The film's investors and completion bond company took direct control of the production and final edit, removing director Russell Mulcahy and his creative influences while changing parts of the movie, the story. The resulting film contradicts the established canon of the first movie regarding the nature of immortals and McLeod's past, such as depicting immortals as aliens and the planet Zeiss rather than the human born with an energy connecting them to nature and to nature and making them unable to die unless beheaded. McLeod's former mentor Ramirez, killed in the first film, is resurrected and now depicted as an alien sorcerer, while the first movie use the word quickening to refer to the energy that gives an immortal their power. This movie uses the term to refer to a magical source Ramirez uses to bond his soul to McLeod's, allowing him to return from death whenever the Highlander needs him. Stick your fingers in the Highlander goo.
Mm-hmm.
Highlander quickening goo.
See, I thought that was the egg from the Mudhorn.
Yes. from the Mandalorian. In 1995, an alternate director's cut called the Renegade version was released to home video, attempted to address the many story problems, as like removing Zeist and that the idea that immortals are aliens, and so on and so forth. So we have director Russell Mulcahy. Let's kind of start with him first. He's the director of Highlander and Highlander 2 and other films like Resident Evil. He's done a bunch of other television series, but he's really known for videos. He's like the video guy. If you go back and look at his video history, he's done AC/DC, The Human League, XTC, The Buggles, Paul McCartney, The Vapors, Spandau Ballet, The Tubes, Ice House. It just goes on and on. This guy was the ultimate video director. Mm-hmm. And thus the inspiration for wanting to hire him, because they wanted a kind of video, I guess a music video kind of style, which you could say was brought to Highlander. And so, you know, it's I personally thought that he was a good choice for this, to get it kind of a different feel. And especially the way the Queen music was introduced in the original Highlander. We get a little bit of that in Highlander 2 as well.
And you get this great visual style from him. I mean, he really does kind of create a pastiche. In rewatching this, I'm really stunned by just how good the visuals are. If you kind of, you know, take out a lot of the plot, what you see in this movie, I mean, that first 4 minutes, I timed it. That's how long it takes to show Connor McLeod's face. But as they're panning across the street and through the opera house, it's this beautiful shot, technically brilliant, before they get to Connor. And it's quite something. So, I mean, he definitely does have fantastic style, and whatever else you can say about this movie, it is very beautifully filmed.
I would agree with you. Sets are fantastic as well. You know, visually it is, you know, with the miniature setting of the cityscape, the backgrounds, it is shot very well. And it's one of the things that, that I do like about this film. Now, as the cast, we've got, of course, Christopher Lambert and Sean Connery reprising their roles. But we get newcomer Virginia Madsen, who played Louise. We get evil baddie Michael Ironside as Katana. Alan Rich as Naaman. John C. McGinley as Blake. Just to name a few of the main ones. We got, of course, Pete Antico and Peter Bosasi as Reno. The alien aliens that come to get Connor. And we also have a uncredited role of director Russell Mulcahy as the shield control technician. And the music is done by Stuart Copeland.
Mm-hmm.
So thoughts on the cast, especially some of the newcomers?
I love Michael Ironside. Anything I see him in, I absolutely love. I always love seeing Dr. Cox in anything. John C. McGinley.
Scrubs, yeah.
I would just love to see him as Dr. Cox in this and just see what Katana would do to him. Because he's already kind of schmarmy, but like, there's no way he'd tolerate him any longer than that. You know, Virginia Madsen, just kind of a treasure. Just wonderful performances. And every few years she pops back up and does something amazing. Really like this, but you got to give it up for Rusty Schwimmer. She was our drunk lady that was yelling at McLeod in the bar. That's you're the one that turned the sky to shit.
She kind of came in and hit a triple and left. Yep. She did a pretty good job.
Yeah, unbelievable performance.
Loved Virginia Madsen. This is something charming about her, and she's sexy, she's pretty, and I've always been a fan of her stuff. I'm a fan of Michael Ironside as well. He is, though, my one problem in the film, and I'm going to tease my issue with that in the next episode of The Fixin'.
Okay.
Because I have some ideas about his character that I want to address. I like him, but I think he overdid it in this film and was too Kurgan-ish, but not good enough to like the Kurgan. So I'll get into that more a little bit
later. Well, I think that we never actually see him win a fight. We have no sense of him actually being a dangerous person.
That's one of my quips that I'm going to bring up later. Right. So, yeah, definitely. So let's get into the plot synopsis for Highlander 2, The Quickening. Lee, will you do us the honors for the original release of The Quickening?
Oh, and I just accidentally just scrolled right past it. There we are. Roughly 500 years before the film film takes place on the planet Zeist. A last meeting is held between the members of a rebellion against the corrupt leadership and the ruthless General Katana. Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez, a wise sorcerer who guides the rebellion, chooses the man called Connor McLeod, a man of great destiny, to lead them against Katana. Ramirez then uses the quickening, which he explains as a kind of magic, to create a bond between him and McLeod that is stronger than death. Katana and his troops then attack, crushing the rebellion. Ramirez and McLeod are put on trial by Zeist's priests, who sentence them and other criminals to exile on Earth, where they will be immortal for some reason. Locked into ageless lives, they will fight each other until there is one left. The survivor will win the prize, a choice to either remain on Earth as immortal and live out their days, or return to Zeist, their past crimes forgiven. Katana is unsatisfied with their decision, but the sentence is executed. Ramirez and McLeod are reborn on Earth, leading to the events of the original film, which also take place 500 years before this. So, okay. In 1985, after all other immortals on Earth are dead and the Kurgan's reign of terror is brought to an end, McLeod wins the prize. He becomes mortal and marries his new lover, Brenda Wyatt. By August 1994, the ozone layer is fading and will be completely gone in a matter of months. Millions perish from unfiltered solar radiation, including Brenda Wyatt McLeod. Before dying, Brenda asks Connor to promise he will solve the problem of the ozone layer. By 1999, Connor McLeod is a supervisor of a scientific team headed by Alan Naiman that creates an electromagnetic shield to protect Earth from radiation. McLeod and Naiman are proud to have saved humanity, but the shield means condemning the planet to no longer seeing the stars, sky, or sunlight, as well as an uncomfortable high average global temperature and high humidity. Unable to see the sky for decades, many begin to suffer from depression and loss of hope, while human society continues to decline due to violence, greed, and crime. Many even grow to hate Connor, saying he ruined the world, ignoring the fact the ozone layer would have killed them if he did nothing. By 2024, the shield had fallen under the control of, well, the Shield Corporation and Chief Executive David Blake, who imposes heavy fees on countries that desire continued protection from solar radiation. Louise Marcus, a former employee of TSC, is a member of a radical activist group that believes the ozone layer has healed and that the shield is therefore no longer needed, and TSC is keeping the secret so the shield can continue providing profit. Now a frail old man, McLeod lives a solitary life. While watching a performance of Wagner's Götterdämmerung, which I actually mentioned in one of our other podcasts, interesting parallel there, he remembers Ramirez appears and is passed on Zeist. Meanwhile on Zeist, the still-living General Katana considers that McLeod may still choose to return to Zeist rather than die on Earth of natural causes. Unwilling to take that chance, Katana sends two henchmen, Corda and Reno, or Kodos and Potos, as I like to call them, to kill him. A small cut on McLeod's hand, delivered by a drunk, instantly heals, and he realizes this means there are other immortals on Earth again. Marcus finds McLeod and asks for his help in taking down the shield he helped create, explaining the ozone is healed. McLeod declines, saying he's dying and doesn't approve of terrorism. Corda and Reno attack, and McLeod desperately tries to escape. When Corda winds up losing his head following a fight underneath a train, let's just get that straight. So awesome. McLeod absorbs his power, regaining the youth and vitality he had won before the prize. He then kills Reno by clotheslining him, literally with a cable, as he's flying on his jetpack, and then instinctively summons Ramirez back to life. Louise witnesses the battle and becomes McLeod's lover, because that's what you do when you see somebody kill two people.
In a dirty, dirty alley.
Yeah, against a dumpster. Because she's classy. In Glencoe, Scotland, the location of his death in the first Highlander film, Ramirez materializes alive and well, interrupting a play of Shakespeare's Hamlet. Drawn to McLeod's location, he pawns his earring to acquire a new sword, a new suit of clothes. He actually does not pawn his earring to acquire a new sword. He steals that from Hamlet, gets a new suit of clothes from Scotland's oldest and finest tailor's shop, and a plane ticket to New York. Meanwhile, General Katana arrives from Zeist, determined to kill McLeod himself. As soon as he arrives, he takes control of the subway car and sends it speeding out of control, killing all aboard. He briefly confronts McLeod on holy ground, where they are forbidden to fight, taunting him before leaving. Ramirez then finds McLeod and Louise, and they make a plan to take down the shield. Deducing that McLeod will target the shield, Katana allies himself with David Blake, who explains the energy required to counteract and disable the shield at this point could threaten the Earth. When it is discovered that he has told McLeod there is proof the ozone layer is healed, Dr. Alan Naiman is fatally tortured. MacLeod, Ramirez, and Louise break into TSC. To rescue him, using his magic, Ramirez sacrifices his life to save MacLeod from a death trap. Blake is killed, and MacLeod, wielding the sword he had before winning the prize, has one final battle with Katana, decapitating him, releasing his own immortal energy and the energy he absorbed from Katana. MacLeod succeeds in disrupting and removing the shield. Louise Marcus, along with many people on Earth, see the stars and skies for the first time in her life. In the UK theatrical release, an extended prologue better explains Connor's motives for creating the shield, confirming his wife Brenda died from radiation poisoning. An extra scene shows Connor and Louise journeying above the shield to confirm the ozone layer has repaired itself. In an extended ending, MacLeod returns to Zeist after destroying the shield, and a scene on the planet walking alongside Louise, who has accompanied him. This has been dubbed by fans as the fairy tale ending.
All right, so thoughts on Highlander 2, The Quickening itself. Let me ask you, how many times do you yourself return to watching any version of Highlander 2?
Every couple of years, I'll pop it in just to see if I was wrong. And then I usually realize I'm not. There's good bones in there, but there's always kind of like that one thing. I got this when it came out on VHS for sale back in 1993, 1994, something like that. And I bought it on DVD and then bought it again on Blu-ray. So I watched it every one of those times. And, you know, you have those bad movie nights with your buddies. And so you throw that one in. And even though, like I said, I admit it's bad, I still enjoy it. So how about you?
That's a good point because, well, it's funny. Since the Renegade version has come out, and the version that Norm and I have endorsed, which is the Highlander 2 Special Edition DVD, which is the Renegade version, but with remastered new effects and sound and all that kind of stuff.
That's the one with the blue shield, not the red shield, right?
Okay. Yeah. And so that was the one I would always watch, and I would enjoy it. I'm a Highlander 2 apologist. But I decided to return to the actual Quickening version a while ago, and I actually watched it because I found it on Laserdisc years ago, and but I'd watched it prior, and then I found myself kind of wanting to return to the original Zeist version. I can't really explain it. I still enjoy watching them both. I prefer the Renegade a little bit more, but there's just something about the Zeist version. I don't know. I can't really explain it. I like to return to it and watch it from time to time, even though I prefer the Renegade / Special Edition one.
I think visually I prefer the Renegade version, but story-wise, Zeist makes more sense than the past to me. Like, it's,
yeah,
you know, it's far more than 500 years, especially if Ramirez is being banished.
Yeah, yeah, especially when they're using like modern-day weapons and stuff, yeah, stuff like that, you know. But when you think about it too, you know, and we'll talk more a little bit about this later, but when the Renegade version comes out, they basically cut stuff out of the Quickening version.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to refer to Zeist at all. And then they filmed an additional brand new scene about 5 years later to kind of, you know, bridge two other scenes and stuff like that. So, you know, it's and so that's why I like returning to the Quickening version, because you get to see that dialogue. Mm-hmm. You get to see the way it originally came out, you know. And obviously there's fans of the original Quickening version with the Zeist mention, because there are fans that do like that. And we'll get into that more later. But I do want to go over the plot synopsis for the Renegade / Special Edition. Connor MacLeod and the other immortals are human beings born with an energy called the Quickening that makes them invincible to death unless they are beheaded. MacLeod and a sorcerer named Ramirez are both immortals and inhabitants of a society on Earth that predates recorded history. During the time when magic and advanced technology coexist, the society is ruled by a dictatorship that is enforced by the military leader General Katana, another immortal. But this rule is opposed by a group of revolutionaries that include several immortals such as MacLeod and Ramirez. Ramirez declares MacLeod the new leader of the revolution and then uses an ancient nameless magic to bond their souls together. When MacLeod and Ramirez are captured by Katana's forces, the priest and chief justice oversees the case, decides to exile them and other immortal criminals to various points of Earth's future, long after their society will have fallen and been forgotten. And one of the immortal exiles is able to kill all the others, the immortal will win the prize. Full amnesty for their crimes and a choice, return them to their true home in the distant past or remain in the future, but now lives immortal who will age and eventually die. Before they are separated, Ramirez promises that the bond between their souls means they can always find each other again, even beyond death. They are then transported to different points in the future. Ramirez is reborn in ancient Egypt and becomes a cunning but morally guided warrior. Connor MacLeod is reborn as a Scottish Highlander in the 16th century, apparently not remembering his first life in the distant past. MacLeod eventually discovers that he's immortal, and soon afterward he is found by Ramirez, who trains him to fight. The Egyptian warrior is then killed by another immortal, the Kurgan. Centuries later, in 1985, MacLeod defeats the Kurgan and becomes the last immortal exile left alive, thus winning the prize and becoming mortal. Since he never fully declares whether or not he chooses to remain or return, MacLeod still has the possibility of returning to the distant past and society he originally called home. Although the first movie ends with MacLeod saying the prize gave him the ability to know the thoughts and dreams of all the people on Earth, the power is never mentioned in the story. Connor MacLeod marries Brenda Wyatt, who later dies in 1994 due to the solar radiation poisoning after Earth's ozone layer is destroyed. By 2024, MacLeod experiences flashbacks of his original life in the distant past and his war with Katana. It is unclear that if this was a direct result of winning the prize or if the memories came back naturally over time. Katana does not wish to risk that MacLeod may one day return home to the future, so he transports two immortal assassins to 2024. When they are both ended up beheaded, MacLeod absorbs their quickenings, energies, and regains his youth and immortality. The rest of the story takes place in 2024, is largely similar to the original theatrical version, with flashbacks rearranged, additional scenes, and some scenes having minor changes. A new scene reveals Brenda Wyatt MacLeod on her deathbed in 1994 due to a solar radiation poisoning, asking Connor to promise he will ensure others won't suffer similarly and will find a way to save Earth. For this reason, MacLeod becomes directly involved in the creation of the shield and protective of its use until he is told the ozone layer is healed, and later confirms this by journeying above the shield with Louise. At the end of the movie, MacLeod releases his quickening energy to overload and destroy the shield, indicating he may now have become mortal again in the process. With the shield gone, he embraces Louise, and the two vanish in a burst of light that raises into the sky, indicating they have journeyed back to MacLeod's home in the distant past. Lee, there's a lot of that stuff in there. I never got watching the extended or the Renegade version, but I'm glad they cleared it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Did some of this seem new to you?
Yeah, and some of it was just, you know, a little bit boggling. You know, I mean, they have to do some mental gymnastics just to explain the plot, which, you know, when you do kind of a recut like this, tends to happen. Especially right. If it's not something that was meant to be. And so you kind of end up with nonsense, a la the Joss Whedon version of Justice League.
Right.
But you have to give him an A for effort to try to appease the fans and kind of bring it back into the continuity. And one thing that I did realize in one of my recent rewatches of this is, if you want to believe this is part of the story and that it actually exists in the Highlander continuity, if you add it to the new Battlestar Galactica and everybody, because at the end, like, they arrive on prehistoric Earth and you have all these replicants that look just like humans but can't die, and they download to each other when they do, you really end up with the Immortals. And you got one of them in the very last episode heading off to Scotland, you know, where the Highlands are, which explains why there's so many Scottish immortals. You've got you even have the technologically advanced members of their race in this crazy ruined spaceship, which was the regeneration ship on the last episode of Battlestar Galactica. So I'm that much of a nerd. I could find a way to make this movie make sense.
All right, well... Okay, so one of the things I thought would have helped with this Renegade version, because they did bring back Michael Ironside, Virginia Madsen, and Christopher Lambert to film that truck chase scene. And this was done like 5 years later, so they can release this Renegade version. I also felt that maybe Connor should have done like an opening monologue voice intro to kind of set things up a little bit better. You know, I don't know why that didn't happen, but that could have helped a lot.
Yeah, because they just sort of dumped you in there and with no real concept. I mean, especially if you're coming from Highlander 1 to this. You know, it doesn't give you a good frame of reference.
Exactly, exactly. You know, there is a Zeist extended fan cut. I want to thank Jill, our friend Jill. She sent me a link to a digital version, and I had watched it. And then she also got me an actual DVD burn copy that these fans made. And we'll get into a little bit more, but they think of it as the, I guess you could call it the Renegade version, but with a lot of the Zeiss stuff put back in. And the movie's like a half hour longer because of that and of how that it's put together. And I'll go into more of the details a little bit later, but I want to get more of your thoughts on the Renegade version. When it came out, did you watch it on video right away? Did you go out and check it out? And what were your thoughts?
Well, of course I got it on video right away. I'm that nerd. You know, I mean, and I do remember enjoying the special effects more. There did seem to be visually, it was a little bit nicer. And for whatever reason, I hated this guy before, but this is a little bit nicer. And I remember maybe it was just my copy, but the sound was a lot better.
Oh yeah, definitely. And the special features and behind the scenes stuff was fascinating because you got to learn why this was the Renegade version and the production company and the people that held the money and all that kind of stuff and what they did to get in and change and have this other version that came out that was not intended to come out and all the problems that happened during this whole production and stuff during their filming in Argentina that you got a feel for, you know, why we didn't get the one that we did. Although there's still a part of me that says they did try to push the Zeiss thing anyway. That was the plan. But they used their means to still, you know, okay, the Zeiss thing didn't work as well as all the other stuff. Let's go ahead and get the Zeiss out of there, you know? So, but I did enjoy it and I still enjoy it a little bit more, honestly. It makes a little bit more sense, but you gotta look past some of the, why do they have futuristic guns like over 500 years ago and stuff like that, So, any other thoughts on the Renegade version?
Not too much. I think it also shows the dedication of the crew to try to make it good. That's one thing that I've noticed working in film is that everybody's working hard to put a product out there. And there's a lot of people trying to make something and that they would go back and try to give people the idea of what they were going for. I think shows a lot of what Russell believed the project could be. So I got to give him props for that.
True. Well, I want to talk about the production a little bit. The sets of Highlander 2 have been compared to those of Ridley Scott, particularly those of Blade Runner. Lambert and Ironside both suffered injuries during the filming, according to the St. Petersburg Times. Lambert chipped one of Ironside's teeth during a fight scene, while Ironside inadvertently chopped off part of Lambert's finger during a sword fight scene. Both men recovered from their injuries, but Ironside said precision threats and parries were impossible when wielding a 22-pound broadsword. And according to the documentary Highlander 2, Seduced by Argentina, the film's apparent poor performance is partially a result of the bonding company's interference with the work of director Russell Mulcahy. Mulcahy reportedly hated the final product so much that he walked out of the film's world premiere, reportedly doing so after viewing the first 15 minutes. For similar reasons, Christopher Lambert threatened to walk out of the project when it was nearing fruition. However, due to contractual obligations, he did not. The once lost alternate ending, commonly known as a fairy tale ending, was shown only in some European theaters. It has never been shown in any of the American cuts. The ending shows Connor magically returning to the planet Zeiss, taking Louise along with him, while Ramirez's voice is heard in the background. An early version of the ending is shown in the special edition. It also includes footage of Virginia Madsen, Louise Marcus, speaking to Lambert as Connor McCloud. Madsen is on location while Lambert is suspended by wires in front of a blue screen. After a brief exchange where Connor asks Louise to come with him, a theatrical ending is shown where the two embrace in front of a field of stars, then transform into light streaks and fly off into space. The ending appeared in the original UK rental VHS release, which was the UK theatrical cut, and sometimes seen in televised broadcast of Highlander 2: The Quickening. The latter retail VHS version simply cuts off after Connor looks up at the starry skies and smiles after the smoke and explosion of the December installation clears. The film was released months later in U.S. on November 1st, 1991, and opened at number 3, grossing $5.3 million in 960 theaters. In the opening weekend, it grossed a total of $15.6 million in the U.S. Now, Lee, there's some critical response to this film. I don't know if you know this.
What?
Yeah, the movie was critically panned and considered one of the worst films ever made. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has an approval rating of 0% based on 24 reviews, an average rating of 2.7 out of 10. The critics' consensus reads, there should have only been one. And Roger Ebert named it the worst movie of 1991. He gave the film a score of 0.05 out of 4, saying, Highlander 2, The Quickening is the most hilariously incomprehensive movie I've seen in many a long day. A movie almost awesome in its badness. Wherever science fiction fans gather in decades and generations to come, this film will be remembered in hushed tones as one of the immortal low points of the genre. If there's a planet somewhere whose civilization is based on the worst movies of all time, Highlander 2: The Quickening deserves a sacred place among their most treasured artifacts. Ebert also mocked The Quickening, saying it looked like a person standing in a puddle has touched another person who had just stuck his finger in a light socket. Your thoughts on that review?
Well, you know, I mean, I've paid a lot of money for that before, so, I mean, it's... you get a discount if they only have one foot in the puddle. it's not unfair. Neither one of those. You know, they're just... I think that I have many times said with Robert Ebert's reviews, like, he doesn't judge the movies by what they're supposed to be. I think he's realizing that there's no way to see what this movie was supposed to be because it, you know, because of the production problems, it is that kind of incoherent. And it's sort of like how moms understand what their toddler is saying and nobody else can. Right. Not, like, I think Highlander fans can understand what The Quickening is about, but nobody else is going to come to its defense.
Well, I had to get the review of our friend Billy Dew, who, as we've read a lot of her reviews because she loves Highlander, and she's obviously reviewed a lot of the Highlander episodes, and we've given her credit for that. And I messaged her. I said, "Do you have a review on Highlander 2?" She says, "Oh yeah, it's not very long." So she sent me a link to it, and she starts off by saying, "Oh my God, what a terrible movie. The original release of this movie was colossally bad that I'm amazed that it didn't sink the franchise before it truly began. Even the Renegade version is freaking awful. Mercifully, I have forgotten a lot of details and I wasn't able to force myself to watch the whole thing in order to write a review. I guess I'd explain why I think it's so awful, though. They made it the ghastly mistake of trying to explain their fantasy universe and practical shit. I suppose it can be done, but moving the story to the future and telling us that the immortals were aliens was not the way to do it. I think they were thinking Superman and Krypton. Wrong. The movie had a fabulous cast, Christopher Lambert, Virginia Madsen, Michael Ironside, Sean Connery. All of them read the script and they still did this movie. Why? It's a mystery. Okay, money, but still. Think of the damage to your career, people. Negative stars, Billy." Let's be honest. I think the big problem with this film, Lee, is they tried to explain the origins of immortals, where I think for us, it would have been better if it was just like, do we really need to know? I mean
we already know that it's Ramirez.
Well,
I just made everybody mad.
Yeah, exactly. Ramirez kind of covers that in the first film. You know, why are there
why does the sun come
stars at night?
Are the stars merely pinholes in the curtains of night? Who knows?
Do you think that was the big problem? They tried to find out where immortals came from.
Yeah, but I think it really stems the big problem was bringing Connery back. As amazing as he was in this, you had to come up with some crazy nonsense to justify it, and that's what they did.
Well, we're going to take a quick break from the immortal world of Highlander and let you know what other great shows are here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to these other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, discussing the latest in entertainment pop culture. Blood of Kings, Immortals Take Notice, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theaters, where we celebrate our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie and TV pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville show. Hair Metal, the 80s and early 90s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our show covering the time-traveling Doctor Who universe with host Dan Hadley. Lethal Mullet, an 80s and 90s action film podcast with host Adam P. O'Brien. Also check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast with hosts Scott, Derek, and Nathan. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, a deep dive into the final frontier with hosts Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. And check out our newest shows, The Fandom Show, our monthly Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube exclusive show about the month's hottest topics in fandom, and the FPN True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the related Marvel television and streaming MCU universe, including the connections to the original Marvel comics. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on several platforms. Please subscribe to the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel to receive notifications of new podcast episodes and live events. You can enjoy all of the Fandom Podcast Network audio podcasts on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcast and iTunes. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network and on Twitter at FanPod Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom. All right, welcome back to Highlander 2, the 30th anniversary retrospective. Yes, we are, we're giving Highlander 2 some love. We know it's not a fan favorite, but as I teased earlier, I'm going to give you an idea on how you can enjoy watching Highlander 2. But first, I got some trivia for you. Michael Ironside, General Katana, recalled his experience on this movie. He says, quote, "Yeah, listen, I hated that script. We all did. Me, Sean, Chris, we were all in it for the money on this one. I mean, it read as if it had been written by a 13-year-old boy, but I never played a barbarian swordsman before, so this was my first big evil mastermind type. I figured I was going to do this stupid movie. I might as well have fun and go as far over the top as I possibly could. All that eye rolling and foaming at the mouth was me deciding if I wanted to be in a piece of shit like that movie, I was going to be the most memorable fucking thing in it. And I think I succeeded."
That's pretty fair.
I got to give him props for being straight up honest, man.
And he, you know, if it hadn't been for, you know, the drunk lady in the bar, he would be the most memorable thing in the movie.
This is true. This
he got upstaged.
Yeah, I got to give it to him for that. Clancy Brown was asked to reprise his role as a Kirk in the cameo, but he declined. Christopher Lambert refused to use a fake sword for the fight scenes. In his first scene with it, he cut his finger to the bone, and Michael Ironside dislocated his jaw in the dome fight. After these accidents, Lambert agreed to use a plastic sword. Director Russ McKay, as we mentioned, didn't like this film, and he left after 15 minutes. He was frustrated that being locked out of the production, that he tried to have his credit changed to Alan Smithy. Mm-hmm. However, a section of his contract forbade him from publicly attacking the movie before his release. The producer said that if he had had credit change, it would be considered an attack and that he would be sued.
Now, you know what Alan Smithy is, right?
Remind us.
That is actually the pseudonym that directors will use if they think their movie is so bad they don't want anything to do with it. So,
and it's been used a lot. Check out IMDb for Alex Smith. You'll see.
And it's a it's an interesting walkthrough to see how many good directors have used it.
Yep, yep. Originally, Ramirez was not supposed to be in the film. However, Christopher Lambert had become such good friends with Sean Connery while filming the original that he threatened to back out of the movie if Connery's character was not added to it. Of course, other than James Bond, Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez is the only character that Sean Connery has played in more than one film. The original initial budget was estimated at $30 million, and Sir Sean Connery received $3.5 million for 9 days of work. Connery donated the money to charitable causes.
The children who lost their eyesight by watching this movie.
Unused scenes reveal that the Kurgan from the first movie was also a resident of Zeist, and General Quintana hired him to kill Connor McLeod. The final battle between McLeod and the Kurgan from the first movie is shown on a large screen to Zeist bettors, and when the Kurgan fails, Quintana sends down the two assassins featured in the final cut of this movie to take out McLeod. Why didn't we see that?
I don't know. That is kind of weird.
It does kind of explain in the first film, though, why Kurgan was like looking for McLeod. So I see why they tried to possibly consider that.
Yeah. And wasn't like that pool full of eels so deadly in their world, so fragile in mine. And he crunches one of them. Like, yeah. I think one of those was actually supposed to be like a Kurgan or something like that. I remember hearing something like that somewhere.
Initial plans for a third movie titled Highlander 3 The Reckoning would have detached the story even further from the original. It would have taken place entirely on Zeist and would have involved Connor training a rebel army to overthrow the rulers of the planet. However, due to the post-production editing that changed the ending in the film's poor and the film's poor box office performance, guess what? The idea was abandoned.
Oh, and you know what I just realized? They were trying to turn McLeod into Dune.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And like literally, he's in two, he's sleeping. The dreamer has awoken and he remembers all of the stuff from the desert planet where he has to defeat the evil immortal. Oh my God. They were cribbing Dune so hard. I can't believe it took me 30 years to realize this.
Virginia Madsen admitted that she did this film for two reasons: to go to Argentina and to work with Sean Connery. And Christopher Lambert was cheated by false Argentinian businessmen to invest the money he got from the movie in some financial management. Christopher Lambert lost all the money. An alternate ending, the fairy tale ending, was shown in some European theaters, as we mentioned. Louise and Connor magically returned to Zeist. Have you seen this, by the way?
I saw like just a brief clip of it, and okay, that just looked so stupid.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It was like a Disney ending or something, like a whole new world named Zeist.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, we're gonna head into the Immortal Buzz segment. So in the Immortal Buzz segment, what we're going to do is we're going to go to our Blood of Kings friends and family there, because I created a poll on the Blood of Kings Facebook group, and I wanted to ask, out of curiosity, because the majority of people are not fans, Highlander fans, are not fans of Highlander 2, for obvious reasons. But I was curious. I said, Lee and I are doing a two-part Blood of Kings Highlander podcast, and we know most people found it disappointing, but our question is, do you actually own a copy on video or digital? And in yes, we had 53 votes, which was 67%. And then we had no, 26 votes, which is at 32%. So what did you think of those numbers? Did they surprise you of how many people actually own a copy of Highlander 2?
I'm thinking that some of those guys are actually lying and they still do own a copy, because...
Are you talking about the ones that say no?
The ones that say no, because every Star Wars fan has Phantom Menace. Every Star Trek fan has Undiscovered Country. We have all the bad movies.
Whoa. Undiscovered Country is the good one. You're talking about The Final Frontier.
Yes, number five. The one that they remade into Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and the Rise now of Skywalker.
And now it's not Phantom Menace. It's the Last Jedi.
Which basically is the same story as Star Trek V.
Yes. You know, you might be right. Yeah, I think some of them are not being truthful. Yeah. But still, the amount of 67% yes to 32% no, I thought was pretty high, to be honest with you. Derek Gidwell says, I can't vote seven times, but I own like two DVDs, two Blu-rays, two VHS, and finally a Laserdisc. No regrets. Jeremy Orr says, a copy, laugh out loud. Two different DVD versions for David Ladd. Jeffrey Joseph Blair says VHS, DVD, and Blu-ray, like most. Absolutely no digital, though. My buddy Tom said there can be only one. And Jill Berticus says versions, two. Thomas Jessup says, I own two different Blu-ray copies, three different DVD copies, and my original VHS tape. All of them are director's cut. I'm still wishful thinking and hoping that to find a theatrical version that I grew up watching. I enjoy Highlander 2, but when I was a teenager, despite how cheesy that it was. Jason Benyon said, nope, the only one that features I own is the original film. The others were too painful for me.
That's fair.
Vince Stefanelli says, I do, but it sucks. But I'm looking at like Shane and Cecilia and David Morgan. They all have like versions, Laserdiscs, DVD, digital. DJ Stokes said, to be a true Highlander fan, you have to embrace the suck. The funny thing about Highlander 2 is it's actually a very high, it's a fairly high budget, well shot, decent action movie with incredible sets, and it's good time for the FX. The disdain for when it comes to trying to reconcile that it's a Highlander sequel. Each Highlander film has to be viewed in a vacuum, except for The Source. It just sucks.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think that means we have to do a fictioning on The Source at some point.
God,
burn it with fire.
Fonda said, nope, don't have it. But yeah, a lot of people here say, yeah, I've got certain versions of it. Mm-hmm. You know, and Jill says extended Zeiss version, which we'll go into the next episode. So yeah, there's still some love for, you know, the movie. I mean, if you own it, you're not going to watch it, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Okay. Let's get into our closing thoughts here. Let's round out our, Highlander 2 Renegade / Quickening. 30 years, dude. It's been 30 years since that film has come out. And it's funny too, because we're also celebrating the 35th anniversary of the original film. It came out 5 years apart, but let's close out with some discussion on this here. I do want to ask you something. Ramirez's katana. He comes to the States with this basket hilt sword, which you actually have with you right now. You have a version of a basket hilt sword.
This is actually an Italian style sword called a schivona, which means cat's tail. Which is odd that a Scottish production of a Danish play would have the, an English play about a Danish king would have this Italian weapon, but it's kind of a fun one. I'd call it a cousin to a basket hilt claymore, really fun weapon, but continue, sir.
So, but then towards the end of the film, he has the more recognizable katana. So does he pick that up in Connor's loft? Like the one you have in your hand? You got
yes, sir.
One? Yeah.
You know me. I always have the sword.
Of course. Yeah, dude. Totally. So what's the deal? Did we miss something there?
I feel like Ramirez picked it up from Connor when he gets there. I think he was like, Shay, if we're going to go fight katana, I should probably have my katana. but I think he picked it up there. I think the more interesting question is, when did Connor go back and grab it out of the wreckage of that spinning wheel of death that fan?
The big fan machine, yeah.
Ramirez just chucked it in the ground and, you know, said, hey, guys, get out of here. I'm just going to leave this priceless antique that you carried for 500 years and I had for 2,000 years.
And even though you guys got the door open, I'm still going to stay here and die.
Yeah. Like, you know, he did the Obi-Wan, you know?
what I love about this film, though, the lead pipe makes an appearance. But the funny part about it is when I don't know if he fights Cordo first or Reno first, but when the two Zeist hitmen arrive and they're up on those scaffolding and he's able to break a pipe and he goes, "Thank God." Yep. Well, I love that.
Here's the other part of that fight that I found disturbing or confusing was either Kang or Kodos's pistol. How strong was it? Because at one point it breaks a railing and then another point it blows up a car.
And, and it blows up that poor guy asking for change.
Yeah, like, you know? Like, okay, just decide how strong this pistol is. Or maybe got different ammo. Maybe. It's a lawgiver. Yeah,
different settings. So the one thing I don't understand is when Cordo and Reno are sent and he fights one and then he fights the other. But when he fights the first one gets beheaded because he falls off the train and the train rolls over his head and decapitates him because Connor is he doesn't have a sword, basically. Mm-hmm. Then he gets that quickening, and that's actually a wonderful quickening. I love that quickening. I mentioned it in our best quickenings episode a couple episodes
ago. Definitely better than katanas.
Yes. So, and then he kills the other one by literally, as you said, clotheslining him. But he still had the sword. But it's so funny that both Cordo and Reno die without actually being beheaded by a sword.
Yeah. And Ramirez.
Yes.
So there's four decapitations, only one by sword in this movie.
Yes. As we mentioned earlier, my one biggest pet peeve in this film is General Katana. We don't really see how badass he is. He kills a bunch of mortal people, but he never killed an immortal.
Yeah. And when he kills the people on the train, it's like, all he does is push the gas. Like, he doesn't, there's no skill involved in that. Like, we just know that he will kill people. We don't know that he can. Mm-hmm. You know? And I do like when he just rips that guy's jaw apart and then breaks his neck. Like, that's pretty brutal. That's something you don't expect.
Yeah, that'll give it the R rating right there. So definitely. Is there any other observations that you'd like to bring up regarding either version of them?
I would say that Christopher Lambert's acting was very uneven through this. His reaction to the shield lighting up the first time is the same as his reaction to Brenda dying right in front of him. Like, he has no emotional connection to her. I think that's why the Brenda part got cut, because like, he's just kind of sitting there like, "Oh, bummer. I'm going to go get a taco." Like, there's no emotion. And like, we do know that he's not one of those apathetic immortals. He does care. And so like, I think he forgot who Connor McLeod was in between one and two.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, let's ask the big question, Lee. What are your thoughts on the differences between Highlander 2, The Quickening, and Highlander 2, The Renegade version, / special edition? Which do you prefer?
I'm just going to say I prefer The Quickening.
Really?
Yeah. The only thing I prefer really about the Renegade version is the blue sky. Something about the red just messes with my eyes.
So you're fine with the Zeist planet, them being aliens and all that kind of stuff? Yeah,
I think it... for whatever reason, that story-wise works better for me. Even though it's crazier, it's like, at least then it sort of makes sense that they wouldn't remember. But like, if they're just sent from the very distant past, like, why are they sent to two different times, all that sort of stuff? But if they're sent from an alien planet, you have time dilation, you have, you know, differences, you know, gravitational pulls, like all sorts of scientific reasons why they would land at different time periods.
Gotcha. I would assume that if you're being sent anywhere, it's going to mess with your memory anyway. Yeah. So, yeah. My favorite is the Highlander 2 Special Edition DVD, the Renegade cut with the new special effects added. I appreciate all the extra work that they put into it. I prefer them not be aliens personally, even though I still enjoy watching that version of it. I like them to be kind of one of Earth's longest mysteries. You know, I don't need to have that story told explicitly, but if you're going to do it, try to make him like do it in the past. Although I would have gone a lot further in the past personally. And it's just a beautiful DVD and the special features on there. It's just done really, really well. But as I teased earlier, how can you enjoy Highlander 2? Whatever version that you want. This is how you do it. Okay. Watch it again with an open mind and just consider it a standalone movie. Consider it. Yes, you could have it. You still consider it as a sequel, but consider it that it takes place in an alternate timeline and disregards Highlander 3, The Sorcerer, 94, Highlander Endgame 2000, Highlander The Source in 2007 for sure, and the Highlander series in 1992, as if they never happened. Just enjoy it as an alternate timeline. What say you, Lee?
I agree, and I also think that Highlander 2 sets up the animated series. So I feel like that could be...
That's an excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up.
So another fan favorite.
Excellent point. I could see that definitely happening, yeah. What's so weird, though, is that Highlander 2 in the future, it came out in 91, but it takes place in 2024, which is 2 years... Was it 3 years from now, which is kind of weird to think about it.
Yeah.
It's not so far off.
Well, Back to the Future isn't even the future anymore.
I know, right?
We're old.
That's right. So anyway, that's how you enjoy Highlander 2. Just enjoy it as an alternate timeline. Don't try to, fix it into where it, tries to fit into the Highlander 3 and all that kind of stuff. Because Highlander 3 pretty much disregards Highlander 2. So there you go.
And have some. All right, let's get into some.
Oh, yes, definitely. Inebriation is encouraged with it, yes. Yeah. real quick, let's let you know how you can get a hold of us here at the Fandom Podcast Network and Blood of Kings. First of all, join us on YouTube. Search Fandom Podcast Network. That's where Blood of Kings and all of our shows will end up audio-wise, and we also have some other live shows as well. And our master feed for all of our audio podcasts, including Blood of Kings here, can be found at fpnet.podbean.com. And when you go there, there is a little button at the top that you can click with three lines on it. And it will bring up all the other different podcasts. And if you just want to stream the Blood of Kings ones, just click on Blood of Kings and you'll see all of our shows there. So check that out. Fandom Podcast Network is on all major podcast platforms, which includes Apple Podcasts and iTunes. And also, too, Blood of Kings is on Twitter and Instagram. And if you are a fan of Highlander and Highlander Facebook groups, please join, if you haven't already, our Blood of Kings Highlander fandom group on Facebook. And if you're a fan of Highlander Gaming, the Highlander CCG collectible card game, we have a discussion group Facebook page for that as well. You can contact us directly and email at bloodykingspodcast@gmail.com. My name is Kevin Reitzel. I'm on Twitter and Instagram @Spartan_Phoenix. Lee, where can we find you?
In an office 70 times larger than my desk, just like Alan.
Right.
Yeah. Otherwise, if you can't find me there, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Way of the Way.
Awesome. There's two ways you can support Blood of Kings and the Fandom Podcast Network. First of all, reviews, podcast platforms. If it allows you, whatever you're using, like Apple Podcast, iTunes, what have you, if it allows you to leave reviews, search Fandom Podcast Network and then leave a review for Blood of Kings there. And also our T Public store. We have Fandom Podcast Network store. And you can get Blood of Kings apparel there. We've got several logos to choose from, including Team Iron Pipe. Get your own Blood of Kings t-shirts and other apparel. You can support us there. So coming up next, our next show is our two-part celebration. Look back on Highlander 2, the 30th anniversary. But what we're going to do is we're going to be fixing Highlander 2, our own fixing version. If you're not familiar with the fixing, we have gone back on Highlander television show low-rated episodes, and we have made changes that have made those better. Make sure you check those out. But we're actually going to tackle a movie. Are you excited about that, Lee?
I am. This is a challenge, and I think if anyone can do it, it's us, brother.
That's right. That's right. So stay tuned for that. Thank you guys for joining us here on Blood of Kings for a retrospective 30 years later on Highlander 2, the quickening/renegade version. I'm Kevin. On behalf of Lee, thanks everyone for listening and join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. That sensation you are feeling, Lee, is that little cup of gold goo. Hope it's not too hot. Hope it's not too cool. But
it's just right.
Lee, this will bond us forever. All you have to do is call my name.
Oh, Kevin.
We are one. We are immortals. Goodbye, everyone.